Thank you, Krishna. Om Sri Nana Paramatmane Namaha. Madhavi, yours was a much awaited video session actually. Can you see me, Madhavi? I can't see you.
I can see you, Usha.
Yes, I can see you now. Yeah. This was much awaited, Madhavi, because we were planning to do this in US itself, but somehow, because you had to give chance to everybody else, you took a back seat, and probably on Friendships Day we are supposed to do this. True Maitri. అంటే ఈ లోకల్లో ఉన్న షిప్లన్నీ ఫ్రెండ్షిప్లు అంటారు, ముంచేస్తాయండి ఈ షిప్లు మనల్ని. బట్ మనది మైత్రి అంటే ఎటర్నల్ ఫ్రెండ్షిప్, వేర్ అంటే ఇర్రెస్పెక్టివ్ ఆఫ్ ఎనీథింగ్ దట్ బాండ్ ఆఫ్ ఫ్రెండ్షిప్ రిమైన్స్ లైక్ ఇన్ అప్స్ అండ్ డౌన్స్, in any circumstances of life we will support each other. And you and Krishna have been doing an amazing work. Of course Rama and then others, Aruna aunty, then Bala aunty, these Parvati aunty, vilandru, whenever they came they did their satsangs there, and this online satsangs have been there for quite some time, right? And in US you've been the prime cause, and I mean, of course, everything by Nana's grace and go. But you've been the vehicle to run it, to drive it. He put it in the steering, he put it in your hands. So, and you've been guided amazingly well. And we can see it through your work. Even in US, when I was there, it was you who initiated all these satsangs, and there was an overwhelming response, and all of you united together, and I mean, it's such an amazing thing. Everybody is so proud of you, because it's different to be devoted and, you know, be in satsang constantly in India than abroad. And you've been following it so strictly, sincerely, with so much dedication that you make us feel a little guilty, actually.
You're all the ones who inspire us.
It's to be a little guilty occasionally, yeah? So that it's like, no, you still have to, you know, like, you can't divert and turn your head. You just have to be focused. Yeah, you tell us about your journey and then, yeah, proceed with them. Yeah, whatever suits you.
Yeah, yeah.
Start ma.
Yeah, thanks, Usha. So, yeah, as I mean, Nanagaru has always been our biggest friend of all. I mean, friendship to me is something, I mean, irrespective of how I mean, irrespective of how many bad things you do, you still be a friend. So that's how it is. Keeps telling us over and over again, and we keep doing the same thing over and over again. But
so, no, in friendship, no, the mistakes are not actually seen. No, what are
seen.
Mistakes to others don't even appear to arise.
Right.
Yeah, because friendship is based on understanding rather than. You know, a love and understanding where you accept somebody absolutely as they are rather than you expect something out of them. You don't expect anything much out of your friends. You're just happy to be in their presence.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, true friends, not
right.
the one, yeah. Who, I mean, friendship itself means that, yeah. So,
so luckily, along with him, he gave us all of you. And all the here. So anything, we always try to help each other out and pull each other out
and
let us know that this is correct, this is not correct in whatever way possible. So it's been an incredible journey so far. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's going to be an incredible one going forward as well. And with Nanagaru, there are no words to describe what experience. I always keep thinking that in a human form, it will not get better than this. I mean, with especially Bhagavan coming into life, Nanagaru coming into life, and in this way, so it will never ever get better. I mean, if we have to take another birth, he will also come. There is no doubt about it.
Yes.
But in this way, I don't think it will ever happen. I mean, in any.
Yeah, we can comprehend more beauty than this.
Right.
I mean, can there be anything more? It just can't be more. It's just perfect. It's just perfect.
Yes. And that's what he also wanted us, right? I mean, he always had been the only thing he wanted us from us was that you just be happy. No matter what is going on, you just be happy. Dukkha rahita sthiti. That's it. And that the definition of that has been changing from period to period to period for us. But what he had in mind was the ultimate dukkha rahita sthiti and the ultimate happiness. That is what he had in mind. But the different steps we went through and the definition of that had been changing over a period of time. And finally, he has given us he made us understand the real meaning of that. Because initially it was different. Initially, happiness was getting a visa. Happiness was getting into a college that you wanted. Happiness was passing an exam that you didn't study for. So, happiness.
True, I think we've all been there.
Right. That was all happiness. I mean, I am going to visit Nanagaru because I want to get a visa. Or I'm going to Nanagaru because I want to get married. I'm going to Nanagaru because I want to have kids. So over a period of time, those were the happiness for us. But every time we went with that, he not only granted that, but also the meaning of true happiness, he would always kind of explain without our knowing.
Yes. What true happiness is, he very beautifully conveyed to us, and he made us realize that, I mean, he, as you said, he fulfilled everything that we wanted and kept hinting us, this is not it, there's something more, there's much more to this.
Right.
Yeah.
So the ultimate goal has to be this. So never did he let us deviate from that, even though we were asking for when he was ready to give all the diamonds in the world, we were asking for pieces of glass. So but he never let us deviate from that. So and that too, I mean, being in the life that we are living right now. Not like we had to leave our family and go somewhere and do some kind of penance and all this. So without even like whatever work we had, we just did that. But then inside there was so much that was going on that it was like a different world that is going on inside. Outside we were just normal people to everybody. We got married, we studied, we are having kids, we are going to parties, we are doing our responsibilities, taking care of kids, children, husband, house, in-laws, whatever work we were given. Outside everything was being taken care of, but inside it was like a different plane. So
absolutely. I think all the substance we couldn't. True, so true, Madhavi. Because what people, it's so true. What you said was so true, and so it was such a subtle point that what people saw of us was different. We had a different world inside all through. Now, can you hear me now? Hello.
Krishma, can you hear her?
Yeah, I can hear both of you.
Now, Madhavi? Okay, come on, you continue.
Okay, sign language. When heart is talking to heart, there is no need for words.
No words.
Anyway, so inside there was like a whirlpool of things. I mean, and it's not just that. I mean, everything he told us, each and everything. Like, if there is certain situation, how do you react to it? If there is somebody who's criticizing you, how do you react to it? If there's somebody who's praising you, how do you react to it? So all those things he has given us each and every example that there was no stone which was unturned when he taught us everything. So it was so much easier, because if we were to have gone to if we had a different kind of lifestyle where we were destined to go as a sannyasi or do some kind of penance somewhere and all that, we wouldn't have encountered all these, and I don't think there would have been an opportunity where all the vasanas that are inside us would have come out. So this is an incredible journey that he is taking us through, there is so many opportunities for us to enhance your inner life, to get to the goal that he has been aiming for all of us. So for me, everything I look at as an opportunity to maybe dig a little bit deeper, maybe one more spoon of digging inside. So that's what happens. And throughout the way, there has been lot of downfalls, downsides, and of course he has shown us different ways. It's not one way. I mean, okay, you are not able to do this. Okay, that is fine. Just try out this way. So those kind of things were, lot of opportunities. The only thing is we had to like open our eyes, keep our heart open, and let him do the work. That was what one of the main things that I've learned. But when you open yourself up, he always used to keep saying that the surgery is being done, but if you get involved in between and you get stressed out and you get, if your blood pressure increases, even the doctors can't do a surgery. So they'll tell you that okay, your levels have to come down.
They'll send you home.
But for us, we're already on the table. Just let him, he knows what he's doing, there is no other doctor than him. So, I mean, just lay down there, happily enjoy the process and watch what is going on. So, that's where it is right now. So, to start off the journey, Usha, our family background, nobody has any spiritual background in my family. The utmost thing that they do is every day morning, just basic, very basic prayer. No, I didn't know of any Sahasranamas or Vishnu Sahasranamas or anything that that existed, because the only thing was probably Vinayak Chavati was celebrated and Varalakshmi Ratham was celebrated. Those were the two things. And after a while, when we got some cars and all that, that's when we started doing dasra. So that was the maximum extent to which spirituality that I know of. And one day, my mother, she somehow came in contact with Chikkala Krishna Rao Garu, who used to write Bhagavan's, translate Bhagavan's books into Telugu. He used to live in Beamley, and he used to write those books. So somehow they formed a group, and he took her, they all went to Arunachalam. And they got Bhagavan's picture, and that was the time when we actually built our house, and there was a separate puja room and all that, because that concept was coming into existence at that time. So so right before leaving to Arunachalam, she actually put a big picture of Sat Sai Baba and Shiridi Sai Baba. I was in my 10th grade, and I thought that I didn't have any kind of respect for Sat Sai Baba at that time. I mean, with the limited knowledge of whatever we keep hearing. So, but then I didn't say anything because it was a puja room, whatever. And then she came, after she returned from Arunachala, she bought a big picture of Bhagavan. So when I saw that picture, I was like, I don't know why, I completely lost it. I was so mad at her. I said, why are you keeping all old people's pictures in the puja room? These are people, these are not gods. So God was only Rama and Krishna and all the devis, Lakshmi and all that. So my understanding was just that. So no concept of gurus or anything. So then she was like, then I said that this, now you got this Sai Baba pictures, now you got this old man. I don't know who this old man is. Why did you keep this person's picture in the puja room? So then she said, no, don't say that. This is a very famous Maharishi. He used to live in Tiruvannamalai or Arunachalam, and you shouldn't be saying like that. So I was like, whatever, teenage attitude and all that. So I was like, whatever, little did I know that he came for me at that time. Somehow things kind of changed after Bhagavan came into the house. Slowly at that age, I kind of like got inclined towards spirituality. And one of the things was, I don't know why, but I started going to Sundar Chaitanya Swami's speeches. He used to explain Bhagavatam early in the morning at 6 to 7. So during that time, that was the first thing I remember, going and just sitting there and crying when listening to Bhagavatam. So all those stories were like, just captivated me. And but again, it was just that 1 hour, and then you come back and your normal college life and enjoying whatever and all that, right? So but slowly what happened was then somehow I don't remember exactly, but somehow I got one book of Bhagavan. So then I started reading that. When I started reading that, all the concepts of Krishna and all didn't appease as much as they used to, then the only thing was, who am I, caught my attention. So it was intense. So whenever somebody talked about, I used to go and listen to everybody, but there was no satisfaction when I listened to them. It was like something was missing. And the only thing that really I understood was when somebody talked about Advaita. That was it. And nobody was there to ask about it. And that Advaita concept was, people used to, I mean, there was one of my classmates who used to go to another guru, and I don't know, when some topic came up and we talked about it, and he was like, no, what you're thinking is completely wrong. There is no concept of I and all that. So, I mean, we were all in the same boat, right? Half-half knowledge. So, and then he said, you should come to my guru. And his guru was someone in Vizag, and he used to make us sit, and he used to play a flute. He used to play the flute, and he used to take us into meditation. And everybody was sitting there quietly and in deep state of meditation. And I was the only one who was like, what is this drama going on? This is all not true, right? Why do you have to go into meditation? And then what happens after you come out of meditation? So we walk out of this hall now, and then your flute is not there. You are not there to take us inside. Then what happens? So I should have kept quiet, but I did not. So after the meeting was over, I went and I told him about it, and he was not happy to listen to that.
Of course.
So he got kind of like upset about it, and then he said he started trying to explain in his own way. And I couldn't explain it because, I mean, with that knowledge, there was no way I could explain Advaita. So I couldn't explain it. And so it kind of went into an argument, and I got very mad and I left the place. And it was in a hotel, actually. So you could see I was coming out of a hotel crying desperately that I was not able to explain the who am I concept, and he didn't understand. And then he told me that who am I concept is not right, and it is not correct and all that, and then I got into an auto, and the auto driver was like totally scared and was like, what is happening, why is this girl coming out of a hotel crying?
this is quite dramatic, actually.
I remember of Advaita. So when after that Ramakrishna Math Ramakrishna Math was open. I wish you could speak, Usha. I don't know, Grishma, can is Usha muted or what happened?
I think they can hear me, Madhavi. I don't know how you can't hear my voice. Grishma, I think all of you can hear me, right?
Yeah, we can hear both of you.
maybe you can rejoin, Usha. Okay, fine. I'll try rejoining. Fine.
Grishma, am I not able to hear anyone?
Can you hear me?
Hello? Grishma.
Yeah, I can hear. Hello?
Yeah. Usha is there?
You can hear me now, Akka?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Yeah.
Usha is back?
1 second.
Okay, yeah. Unmute her, please, Grishma.
Yeah. Usha,
yes. Yeah. Fine. Okay,
so,
you can hear me now?
I can hear you now.
It's like...
I wanted you to talk.
It's like your Ziddi that you didn't make him understand, so you're very clear that Usha has to be audible now.
Right. Because I know you have so many experiences like this.
So that is quite interesting. That's what I was telling. It is quite dramatic, no, the way it happened. I know many times it's like this, Madhavi. I mean, the world is so full of Maya. The world is so full of Maya. And we've been with a master who is so full of light.
Right.
Okay, he's so full of light and he's full of consciousness. It's a different plane, as you said. Internally, it's a different plane for us in his presence. And it's very difficult for us to express this in words to people who don't understand.
Right.
whatever level of maturity they are in, or whatever level of sadhanas they have followed in their life, when it comes to the Atma Vidya, we were given it crystal clear.
Right. Right.
Maybe it will take time for us to get there. But definitely right. We have a complete clarity of what it is.
What it is, an understanding yeah. of what it
so,
is. Right?
Yeah, so your frustration is understandable because if only we could explain better, they would be convinced.
My main issue was that I felt like they were all wasting their time in all this because you had to repeat, you had to go through that path and then repeat all this again. So why not just start off here, right? But
yeah, there is this thing, Madhavi. Bhagavan's path is direct, where you don't have to deal with anything external.
Right.
Nothing external. It's the singing or music or whatever. No, it's, everything is external, but it's your internal thing. And right. it's the very fact that where are you arising from in the first case?
Right. Yeah.
From where have you identified yourself with from within, not from without?
Yes.
You're not identifying yourself with the world after, externally. You start from within. So, right. because the truth is within and ignorance is also within.
Right.
So, your work is within only, nothing to do with the outside.
Yes.
Yeah, right. But once the work is done, there is no inside and outside, it's all one.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think Nandaru has been slowly training us to actually express it in a better way. So that you remember he used to give this example of that Tirupati where he was quite a scholar, he read a lot of Bhagavan's books. He was quite impressed with the subject, he was quite well versed with it, but when he really wanted to speak about it, he was confused and he was muddling it up.
Yeah.
And Nangaru had to slowly tell him, please go into the story of Bhagavan and end it. Don't get into the topic of who am I.
That we'll go into the stories but not to the real concept.
Yeah, but it's such a profound thing, Madhavi. I mean, to be impressed by the Advaita itself is a great deal.
Right.
You know, like letting go of all attractions, only possible because of Guru's presence.
Yes.
Because he is that. Unless Guru is that, you cannot experience it in his presence.
Yeah.
And once we have experienced it, we cannot believe in anything else because we know this is the truth.
This is the truth, yeah.
No matter how much glory anybody shows outside of yourself, you will know it's all to the mind.
Yeah.
And that's why he said, understanding itself, you will almost get there.
More than half is done. Half of the work is done. Yes.
Because you are cut off from the knots very easily by very understanding itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and as you said, continue, Madhavi.
No. Say, finish your sentence, Usha.
So, I think... I think that was your initial stage. Now I think you can explain to anybody in the way they can understand.
So yeah, as I was saying, I mean, one time when I was there, he was trying to explain between what is the, if everything is destined to happen. Then this was when Dr. Madhavi garu was also there in July of 2017. So he was talking about how Bhagavan's, the first statement of Bhagavan, everything happens at its own way. Whatever is destined to happen will happen.
Will happen. Whatever is not destined cannot happen.
It will never happen. Yeah. So no matter what, right?
And it's certainty.
Yes. that is certain. And then he said somebody asked, is this decided when we are born? And Bhagavan didn't say, yes, it is written on your forehead, yes, this is this and all that. But he said, certainly. There was only one word, nothing else. I mean,
certainly,
that's it. I mean, so then he was explaining this. So then the topic of then if everything is destined to happen, then where is my free will? Where is my freedom? And why should I do sadhana? So this is a very fine line, and it cannot be understood. There is a very, very fine line, and this is where we can like topple down the mountain and roll over and never be able to get back if you don't understand what he's trying to
correct.
Say. And, and he has made us over and over. I mean, and he I mean, because of his level, we were able to understand it easily.
True.
When
Absolutely.
You look at it from even lot of Ramana devotees can't understand this concept. So
it's very subtle, Madhavi. It's very, very subtle.
Very, very subtle, and there's a very fine line. And if you don't understand that, then there is no way you will be able to proceed in sadhana, because the Maya is way too strong, right? So yeah. So he was saying that yes, there is whatever is destined to happen will happen, and the only thing that happens is that the pressure of those circumstances will not fall on you. That's what happens when the question of why do we have to do sadhana? If everything is happening according to God's will, then this is also happening to God's will. Then why am I doing all this sadhana? So then he said, yes, everything is happening, and this is what Bhagavan said, certainly is the word. It happens according to God's will, whatever is in your destiny. The only thing is that everybody will have to go through a destiny, goods and bads and everything, but the impact on that is negligible when you're in sadhana. And that's what we are all seeing. I mean, be it Rajeshwari, be it Kanmur Lakshmi, I mean, these are just the recent examples that we have seen, right?
Yes,
the body is taking its course, but if you move them inside,
exactly.
there is absolutely no impact.
Yes, yes.
So, when
Madhavi, this is very beautiful, because I think this is something which we need clarity on. Because the very purpose of our satsang, this is a very, very important point which you picked up today, that yes, everything is predetermined. Where does our free will lie? Free will lies in your perception of it.
Right. Yes.
Only a perception of it. So once, if you are detached from your body and mind, there is no world itself. Is the ultimate thing. There's no world, there's no nothing apart from you. Like Nana always said, no, like he would take example of somebody, suppose he took your example, say, there is no Madhavi apart from God. This is something he picked up, you know, like certain things, you know, spontaneously from the divinity. It just, you know, like, I mean, it's an amazing way of teaching, so that you are spellbound, and you are, you know, it's like putting a torchlight on your face. Straight away.
Right. And for you, I remember this was one of the statements, right? He used to say, you want Nitya, you don't want Leela. He kept on saying that even when he was going into the car, he was like, you want Nitya, you don't want Leela.
even this, no, there's no Usha apart from God. Was also one of the trips of Tiruvannamalai, where daily for almost 8 days, Madhavi, he kept saying, whenever he looked at me, of course, then other devotees also would be there and he would pick on each one occasionally, but he was so focused, so that it has to be registered that you are not apart from him.
Right.
I mean, he was so insistent, there is no Usha apart from God. There is no Madhavi apart from God. There's nobody apart from God. If at all you think you are apart, who are you?
Right.
And when he, you know, when he looks at you, focuses it on you, he, you know, eye to eye, he's looking at you and he's asking you, there is no Madhavi apart from God. He made a statement, he concluded a statement. There is no Madhavi apart from God.
Madhavi apart from God.
It is a conclusion.
Where he started, right.
He concluded it, and now, suppose you think you are there. who are you? If there is no Madhavi apart from God, if there is Madhavi, who is she?
Well, yeah.
So instantly you are set. You become silent.
Yes.
Because the master has made a statement and made you question that which is not you.
Right.
The work is done, Madhavi, if you truly understand this alone.
I know.
Similarly, everything he spoke, every sentence he spoke, was a conviction that the truth is, the body is not part of truth, your mind is not part of truth, the world is not part of truth. It is a different entity. When realized, you will realize there is nothing apart from you.
Right, yeah.
You're not apart from God. Once you realize, there's nothing apart from you. Can you hear me?
We lost you again, Usha.
Okay. Yeah, I think you should continue.
Now I can hear.
continue.
So understanding that fine line between everything is predetermined, and that also, as I was talking earlier, it was different stages, right? Whatever is destined to happen will happen no matter what, and whatever is destined not to happen will not happen no matter what, was also a different levels of understanding at different stages. And but these are, I feel for every sadhaka, these are some kind of like written in the stone kind of things where you have to have these principles. I mean, he will make us believe in those, but even if you don't believe in those, you have to set them in stone for yourself. Otherwise, you will get there one day, no matter what. But the only thing is, how many days will it take to get there?
Yeah. How long will it take?
If you believe that, right, if you believe and set this in stone, I mean, Bhagavan and Nanakaru, they are not like, you could see and understand their life, right? I mean, they didn't just come just like that and make these statements. I mean, they lived that. If you don't believe in the power of or the oneness or whatever, but at least you can just basic knowledge, if you look at their lifestyle and look at the way of their living, you understand they didn't just come just like that to make.
Yeah, because most impersonal living.
Right.
And most impersonal living is one thing, and the unconditional love.
Right.
Irrespective of who or what you are.
Yes.
The same equanimity, no difference between a sadhaka and a non-sadhaka, no difference between a rich and a poor, no difference between color, caste, creed, nothing.
Nothing.
Unbiased, unconditional love.
Right.
Because he is your very self. And self,
right.
Self is equal in everyone.
Yes. Yeah.
Only because we look superficially do we see the differences. He was always one, so there's no difference.
Yes.
And he wanted to take each one of us to that state quickly as he could.
I know, right? And without expectation, anything in return. What we used to take were some apples, some at the most some chocolates.
Chocolates or biscuits and bananas.
It was not at all worth. And nothing he kept.
Ajay, the sake of the palam pushpam toyam. I mean, God does not want anything from you. Whatever you offer with love, it could be just water. It could just be a leaf.
Yeah.
If you could offer it with wholehearted love for him, he says that has more weightage than all your wealth.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why intention matters. You know, your intention matters more than your actions. Or what you're doing externally is a secondary thing. With what heart you're doing it is what he looks at. small things with great heart.
Yeah. One time I remember, Usha, I was when I was coming to India at the airport, I saw a small sculpture of the White House. So I took that, okay, and because he likes White House, he likes the Lincoln Memorial. So I took the White House. So first he didn't understand. He was like, so what is this? Why did you get this? What actually is this? And then I said, this is the White House. Then his face glowed and it was so bright and lighted up. Oh, this is the White House. Is this all the trees that are there around it? Is it? Does it really look like this? I said, yes, it kind of looks like this. It has all the trees. And then he said, okay, are these all the rooms? I said, yes, these are all the rooms. And I was, ఎంత మంచిగా తెచ్చావమ్మా. I mean, it is just a small and what is it for him? I'm thinking, right? The way he used to just filled with joy for those small things. So, and he talked about that time, he talked a lot about Lincoln Memorial. Then he asked, how far is Lincoln Memorial from the White House? You were there, right, Usha? We went when you came here. So you had to go there. We had to go there to the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes, yes.
I won't talk about all the things you and Prashanti did that day, but...
Certain things need to be censored, right? He gave weightage to all these great personalities because of their egoless behavior or what they have realized in their entire life or what they pursued all their life. It could be like Gandhi stuck to truth. Okay,
yes.
So similarly, like Lincoln, he no matter how many times he failed, he never gave up.
He gave up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Alexander, like for instance, Alexander, he won everything. He fought so many wars. He conquered so many lands. But ultimately, he realized that he's going empty-handed. And what did he conquer all this for?
Right.
So, like, he would bring us examples of, you know, like, such enlightenment. Such enlightenment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Einstein, Newton, I mean, we wouldn't have seen those people in that direction, in those angles.
Yes.
So,
Keats, Kelly.
Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. Everything, philosophy, science, politics, everything. You say this, there is nothing that he hasn't covered.
Yes. Yeah. There was no... He didn't turn over Usha for us.
To show us truth exactly as it is.
Yes.
So that you are not deceived also, Madhavi, because I remember when we had been to Qatar, he spoke a lot about Maya. I mean, that was the only time, I think, in my 26 years of journey with him, that trip alone was more focused on illusion more than truth.
Mm.
Because generally he spoke only about truth and getting us to the truth and negating all that is not we, or negating all that is not you, right? But that was the only trip where he focused on only illusion and kept saying, like how we say the truth is limitless, the truth is vast and limitless. So is illusion limitless. So is illusion vast. So is illusion appearing so real that truth seems unreal.
Yeah.
That is why we cannot quit this and pursue that.
Yeah.
So he threw so much light, and actually I was suffocated in a couple of days when he was constantly talking only about illusion. It was really, really suffocating. And I said, no, this is what we experience every day, and you're imposing more and more. It's generally you speak about truth and we get so you know, free, enlightened, and light-hearted, and we feel that, yes, this is truth alone exists. And now you are talking about illusion so much that it's causing me a headache and giving me suffocation. Then he said, you need to understand even this, because illusion, you know, like illusion can come in the form of truth to deceive a sadhaka.
Yeah.
And it will make you believe that this is the truth.
Yes.
So you need to have a complete understanding of illusion also, not only of truth.
Yeah.
So that you never get deceived in your life thinking this could be the truth.
Yes.
Yeah. So he gave entire clarity of your internal life, your external life, the truth, the imagination, the real and the unreal.
Yes.
And about including siddhis.
Yes, including siddhis, definitely, Usha.
Yeah. I mean, siddhis is supposed to be something more superior in the world, right?
Yeah, right.
And scientific achievements. Scientific achievements seem like great, because that's what is, I mean, something unusual is great to us.
Right.
Yeah, but we are stuck in the dream stuff. We don't realize even that is dream stuff.
Yes, but yes, so that is also true to only certain level of plane. Yeah, after that is not true, right?
Yeah,
and we've heard with Nanagaru's devotees that several of them have attained some kind of siddhis, but in their general talk, they talk it as something very casually they got it, and but nobody gives attention to it. So that is the amount of teaching he's taken us. So that's how far he has taken us.
Yes, absolutely.
So then after my mother died, 2 months, a month or so, I started hearing her voice. So I could literally see her and hear her voice. And I started hearing other souls' voices also. But first time I heard her voice, my only prayer was okay. She was kind of surprised that I could hear her, and I could actually feel her as.
Okay.
So and then somebody else was also trying to talk, but the thing was, I mean, it didn't appease me. I mean, there was no, I was looking inside myself. Okay, this is nice that I can hear someone who's not in this plane, but this is nice. But then there was no interest, or there was no kind of like joy, or okay, maybe I should pursue this. Maybe I could help this. All I was thinking is, okay, I can hear you. So what? I mean, this is not my goal. That was the only thing I was hearing. And this is, I'm not saying this as an achievement or anything, but this is where Nanagaru has taken us. I mean, without his teaching, it wouldn't have come so easily. I mean, we wouldn't have like stopped it, nipped it off at the bud. After a couple of days, it went away. So it didn't come back. So, And was I sad? I was trying to analyze myself. Okay, I that was something great. I could have maybe helped her by listening to her. So I said, I don't want it. Am I sad about it that I didn't take it? But that is not my goal. I mean, she has her own destiny. She had changed a lot towards the end of her life. She started believing in Nanagaru a little bit at least. So he will take care of her at one point or another in some form or the other. But that is not my goal. My goal is to see, be receptive to what he wanted, rather than what I wanted. So there was these are some things that you automatically keep getting, but it becomes so negligible with his teachings that you don't care about them anymore.
True.
Yeah, and even the most of the times, I mean, this again, a lot of I've heard from a lot of devotees, that you think about them and suddenly a few minutes later they call you and they talk to you. I mean, it's like happens with a lot of devotees. They tell you that. So, but there is no pleasure being derived from that kind of a state that you are achieving. So those are the things that I mean, forget about our bodily things, but these are the states that he's taking away. We are not enjoying those kind of things mm-hmm. anymore. I mean, we don't even like look at them.
We don't give any importance or weightage to it.
Right, yeah. Right. And it's just not that, but it's, I mean, we've seen it with a lot of other devotees as well. That's where he's been taking us, is without any effort. These are some things people put in a lot of effort to get them and then get rid of them.
Yeah. Yes, so, yes. Because it's so easy to get stuck. It's easy to get stuck.
Yes. Yeah.
Then to live, yeah. Then to liberate yourself, it's easy. It's the easiest thing is to get stuck.
Yeah, it is.
That's why, unless you know the true glory of truth, unless you have experienced the true glory, you cannot be without deviating yourself to attractions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And yes, you do get tests, Madhuri. It's not like you. The path is straight and easy. At the same time, the distractions are tremendous.
Yes.
Because it's not, I mean, it's easy. At the same time, it's not so easy also.
That is true, Usha.
Yeah.
Again, there is a very fine line. I mean, if you don't hold on to the guru's feet, you will just fall from the top of a mountain, and that's it.
True.
So everybody will go through these different stages. I mean, it has go through in order to get to the state where he's expecting us to be there. And the only, from the beginning, Usha, one thing he used to always tell me, one thing that always stuck with me and he kept repeating to me was like, learn from others. Look around you and learn from others. Mm. Every time, this went on for a certain number of years. Whenever I went, he would always talk something very, very nice about, I mean, the best thing about everybody he used to tell me. He told me about Deepa once. He told me about our Sujata auntie. He told me about Mohana auntie. So these were some things like Padma auntie. Work related, he used to write like Padma auntie. So work, how do you have to do your work? Everything has to be perfect. So, but what is the definition of perfectness? There is only Atma is perfect. In this world, there is nothing which is perfect. So how can work be perfect? How can you do a work that is perfect? So, yes, for that he would say whenever these kind of doubts would arise, he would immediately answer those, right? So he would say
answer with an example. With an example,
yes.
So that you have a complete clarity of what you're asking, you know, like
what we are asking.
So that you never, not only he answers you with clarity, he will make sure you remember it by giving an example which is just perfect.
Yes. So, I mean, with Padmanti, if you take her example, I mean, when Nanagaru comes, everything is pick and span, everything is done on time. If he is eating, it will go directly from the stove to his plate. There is no stop in between. It has to like go directly at the perfect time. When Nanagaru finishes the last...
You know, this saying actually suits her best. Cleanliness is next to godliness for her. Godliness is next to cleanliness. She's that perfect in her cleanliness.
Yes.
Yeah. Clean.
Yes, yeah. Even small things. One day they were making for his birthday, they were making pakam garlu, the sweet curry. So they had to poke holes in the garri to for it to cook properly inside. So she made a servant climb up the coconut tree, grab a leaf from there, cut that, wash it, clean it, and then use that. So that is perfectness.
That is perfection, my God. The way you do work with the minutest detail.
Right. I mean, and they are serving God. I mean, directly Nanagaru. So it has to be at that level. Yes. And certain people are chosen for those kind of tasks. And I mean, if I was given that task, I don't think I'll think in that way, and I will never match up to that. So small things
that's
like that.
Said that. That's according to your swabhavam.
So how will you do a job perfectly when it is an external thing and it's not perfect, right? So he said, when you finish that work, nobody should say, oh my God, who did this work? They should say, oh wow, who did this work? Nobody else can do anything perfect, anything better than what this person has done. So that was so simple. I mean, because perfectness is always relative. So you cannot, only Atman is perfect. So how can you do
that? There's nothing like perfection in your appearance or your work or your thinking. Nothing. Yeah. But in relative term, as you said, yes, you can work to perfection where nobody can point out that this work hasn't been done well or it could have been done better.
And then he said it has to satisfy you too. So these were kind of the things that kind of stuck. I mean, because when you cannot do your work, of course, do I do this correct every time? No, there's a lot of failures. But that keeps coming in mind, and we always try to give 100% to it. So these were again some of the steps. Why do we need this? So because this definitely helps with our sadhana. Just because you're doing external work, which is destined again, so how is it helping you? I mean, if it is destined, you're doing it perfectly because it's already written in your destiny. So that particular coconut leaf was to be plucked. But that's a very subtle difference, right, between... How it is?
Yeah, this is what actually I kept telling recently. Yesterday I was talking to Grishma. I was telling this. This is a very thin line, as you said, very fine line, and that's why Bhagavad Gita is pramanam antaru kada. Bhagavad Gita pramanam manaki. I mean, Bhagavad Gita is ultimate authority.
The rule book authority.
So it's like in which he says, I mean, in Nangar's words only, because we do not know anything else. He said, do work as if it's entirely on you.
Right.
Do work. Suppose you are given a work and the work is supposed to be done by you. It's like, this is my work. I have to do it to the best of my ability.
Yes.
And this is in my hands only.
Yeah.
And after doing it like that, leave it as if it's got nothing to do with you.
Nothing to do with you, yes. That's the next part, right? Ownership and doership. I mean, that's an again another big... Yes.
I mean, what we spoke, no? Nangar said, understanding is everything. If we really understand this thin line, this fine line, I mean, as he asked us to, comprehend it, as he made us comprehend it, we will not deceive ourselves, Madhavi. We will not deceive ourselves.
So
any work that's given, we will know when we do it with whole heart, when we don't do it with whole heart.
Yeah.
Because the satisfaction will be different when you have given your best.
Right.
But when you couldn't give your best, you very well know, and there is some guilt that you couldn't give your best.
Yes.
Yes. So, and of course, as you said, failure is a natural thing for anyone. Failure is human. I mean, to flaw, to err is human also. But again, then correction of it. You know, correction of it with humility to yourself. You don't have to explain it to others. You don't have to, you know, make yourself superior or inferior to anybody else. You just have to work with yourself. Because ultimately, it's between you and him.
Right.
And ultimately, whatever you do, you have to do in a way he asked us to do it, because that's where your egoless behavior will be.
Right.
And that's what will take you to the ultimate state.
Yeah.
To actually who you are.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So initially you used to tell me about these things, Usha, and then later on, then after a few years, he started saying, work is being done through you. You are not doing it.
Yes, so absolutely.
Then, absolutely. Like all these years, you're trying to be perfect to do the work, then you come and
once
say work is being done
you
through
do
you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is such a beauty, Madhavi. I mean, the stages, it's like you go to a school, no? You go to school, you don't go to 6th class or 7th class directly away. You go to kindergarten, you do your LKG, UKG, first, second, third. Maybe if you're a very good student, you can jump a class. But you go only stage-wise, right? Normally, it's going by stage-wise. I mean, step-by-step, one step at a time. So that's what, once you have mastered the way you do your work and you have given your best, you have learned to give up whatever you have done. You have learned to accept the result, no matter good or bad. No matter you planned it well, but it didn't turn out well. You accept the divine will as if, okay, let his will be my will. Let his will be my will and let me accept it as it comes, because it is in Kartru Ragniya Prapite Phalam. Kartanvu Kaadu. Because, yes. And the Phalitam, Phalitam is not, your work does not give you the result. The result is given by God.
God.
So we accept this also. And as you said, after you have done this for a certain period of time, then he will make you realize it was not you in the first place.
Where is Usha apart?
I mean, it's like, you know, like cutting off those knots that has been tying you for so long. Suddenly there is a light from within where it's true enlightenment, no? Like every knot when it is removed. See, ego is nothing but, you know, like the knots of a hay. You have knotted or knots of a thread. Mm. Yeah, when you unknot it, or like the onion, the peel of an onion, like onion peels, you take one layer after another. Well, when you have removed all the peels, there's nothing. So layer after layer.
Take us ultimately.
So as the layers are removed, you experience a lot of vastness and freedom within.
Yes.
And that's when you know you are in the journey, you haven't distracted, you're not diverted from it. But once you're diverted, you will know you are stuck, something is hindering you.
Yes.
And then you need to observe it and you need to understand to let go. Yes, God is working, but you have to let go. As you said, you don't make a tantrum when you're supposed to be treated.
Yes. And then after that, he started saying, in that state, there is no effort.
And
that's the ultimate thing, right? When you don't identify yourself with the body and you get to that final state, there is no effort.
Effort leads to effortlessness. Effort for some time leads you to effortlessness. Yes.
So that's the goal that he wants us to be in. And in that effortlessness, he said, you don't have to love anybody. There is oceans of love that will just flow through you. You don't have to think about, you don't have to. I think this was in July of 2017 that he said, there is, in that stage, there is no effort. There is vastness of love that will flow through you. And even if you want to, I mean, right now you are at a stage where you you want to help someone, you either physically or mentally or spiritually, whatever.
Yes.
But in that state, it happens naturally. Help that they need will flow through you. That is the state.
Yes.
Yes, that is the stage. I mean, of course, that is the stage we are all seeing in him, but that's what he wants us to be.
Us to be, yes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, I mean, different stages, I mean, incredible. I mean,
also Madhuri, here, no? It's like when we are focused on what he is speaking and when we are focused on doing what he asked us to do, he gives these gifts in between of, you know, like the chocolate or a gift, you know, like, okay, you finish this page, I give you something. So he gives you a gift of, you know, more understanding. He gives you a gift of you knowing that you are not the doer.
Right. There is so much so much beauty inside Usha that that sometimes again it feels, well, this is enough for this life, right? I mean, this is it. But I know he won't let us stop there, but there is so much beauty, it's like I think this is enough.
Actually, in his presence many a time in his presence we would be so overwhelmed that we would think, this is enough for this life. There's nothing more to seek.
See, and then the next, he'll laugh at you when you keep thinking like that. All of a sudden, he'll turn towards you and give that smile, that mischief smile. And then the next moment, he'll show us something that is even more incredible.
As you said, no, we ask for glass pieces when he wants to give us diamonds. So slowly he increases our level of understanding and shows you, no, there's much more beauty. I'm tuning you for something higher. Aim at the highest only.
Sujata aunty, he used to always tell me about the level of understanding she had on the subject. And for me at that initial stage was, so, wow, Sujata, Nanagaru, even though she's not there, Nanagaru is thinking about her and praising her so much. So next time I come here, that was my goal at that time. Yes. Next time I come here, Nanagaru has to praise me that I am understanding the subject. So those are kind of things, I mean, but I think that that's how he laid the steps for me. I mean, everybody's path is different again. So he used to tell about Deepa a lot, how she used to travel for work for a long distance and how she used to like listen to his cassettes every time on the way in and out. So, and then also her perfectness about work, she got some awards at work that he was so proud of, and he used to tell that she received all these awards and this is how she worked, this was her work culture and all that. So those are, I mean, a lot of things that kind of really helped.
That's such a beauty, no, Madhuri. No, as you said, no, the saints lived what they spoke and they set an example of how we ought to live.
Right.
And he would encourage the good quality in each one of us, and he highlighted our merits.
Yes.
He would speak of demerits or vasanas in his public pravachans, but when it came to personal dealing with us, it was only love and the beauty that he saw in us, the merit he saw in us to upgrade us in our very essence.
Right.
Picking up the best quality in you to, you know, like improve it further and come out of all that is not you.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful, a very, very beautiful art of molding you without pain.
Yes, yes.
Ante, cheptaru kada, statue ni shuddhi petti kodite, you turn it into a beautiful model, you turn it into a beautiful woman or a beautiful piece of art.
Right.
A sculptor does it, and they say, you know, there's no gain without pain.
Right.
But if you surrender to his will, and as you said, you believe in the higher power, and you lay yourself to the higher power, then you will not even know the pain of being sculptured, because you will be like the stone which is unmoved, and he will do what he has to out of it.
Yes.
Yeah. We need to get there.
That reminds me. There was I don't know if he said it or this one statement helped me a lot, Usha. When you're being sculpted, if you break somewhere, it becomes a stone for the washing man, right?
Yes.
They take the clothes, but if you go through it, then you become a sculpture, and you
get a beautiful statue.
Statue.
Yeah, so that's and even the idol, it includes the idol in the temple.
Right. That's how it is, and that's what he wants us. I mean, yeah, as you said, there is, even though there is so much going on, there is no pain. I mean, I don't say there is no pain, and this is what it is. There is pain, but there is no suffering.
There is pain. Yes, absolutely. This is very important, Madhavi. All of us go through pain, but pain is different, suffering is different.
Well, suffering is different.
Yeah, including my sister Padma. It makes us flabbergasted to see her going through so much physically, going through so much pain also, but being able to, completely conscious, alert, and being in grace.
Yes.
Yeah, and when I saw Rajeshwari aunty recently also, I felt the same. When I saw Lakshmi, I felt the same. When I saw Bhimvaram Parvati aunty, I felt the same. The pain may be different for each. For some it is physical, for some it is ill health, for some it is loss of somebody in the house, for some it is their child, for some it is their father or mother. It could be anything. The pain could be anything, but are we suffering or are we out of suffering? I mean, at least an effort to come out of suffering without even knowing we are making an effort.
Yes.
It's happening spontaneously in his love and grace. And subject is the key.
And that is the fine line between your destined to happen and your free will.
The way you perceive it.
Right. Yes.
Absolutely.
There is absolutely no suffering. And it's just amazing. And incredible, Usha. I mean, if somebody doesn't take advantage of this, then your loss is so much greater, right?
Your loss is so much.
And we are not spending anything.
Nothing. Most beautiful things in nature, or most beautiful things in this world, are free of cost. That's why probably we don't know the value of it. We do not know the value of a tree. We do not know the value of the air we breathe, which is free. Now Corona time, so many people ran out of oxygen. We realize suddenly the importance of oxygen, which we breathe so freely.
So in and out every second.
I mean, how much... If you have to retain your body for 5 minutes or 5 days, if you had to provide it from outside with the cost,
yes.
How many can afford it, Madhavi?
Yes.
So God has given us in plenty, which you cannot buy.
And we
seem to ignore them. And the beauty, and also like you can take it this way also, the beauty of life. In watching the miracle of life itself.
Yes, that it's as simple as that. But this understanding we can't get without all that we were told.
slowly we shall walk, but we shall not look back.
Yes. So, in 2017, end of August, my mother passed away, Usha. So, he kept on asking everybody, where did she go? He didn't ask me anything. He didn't tell me anything. But the minute the 11th day was over, he was in Vizag. And he just made an excuse that he had some doctor visits and he came on the 11th day, after the 11th day was over. On the 12th day, he was in Vaisak. So he kept asking my Atta, where did she go? And if I remember correctly, I think around that same time, PSN Rajgaru uncle also passed away.
He wasn't keeping well and he passed away, correct.
Yeah. So, when the phone call came, he kept quiet for a long time, and then he asked again, and then they said he's no more, and he kept quiet, and then he said a lot of people used to ask Bhagavan where did your mother go, did she die? Then he said she didn't die, she got absorbed. And that was what he said when PSN uncle left. He didn't die. He got absorbed. And then he kept quiet for a long time. And then he turned towards me and he said, "You have to die such a death that you have to see your own death and laugh about it. That is the stage you have to be. You have to look at your own death and laugh about it." And then he said, "Your mother died in a coma. That's not how you should die. You have to look at your own death and laugh about it. You have to die in that body, but you have to look at yourself and laugh about it." So until then, all those days he was there and I was there, he kept on asking everybody. He didn't ask me, he asked my attas and all that. Where did she go? And he never spoke any sympathetic words or anything about my mother's death. He didn't ask me anything. He did ask me, but he didn't say anything. But for them, he kept on saying, "Did you repay her? Did you cook for her? Did you repay her? Did you take care of her while she was in the hospital? Did you take care of the relatives who came? And all those things. What did you do on the 11th till now?" And all those things. But he never asked me any of those things. Then after that, he suddenly says, "That's how your death has to be. You have to look at your death and you have to laugh about it." So, I mean, and it's not an easy thing. I mean, I'm like, look at your death and laugh about it when you're dying. I mean, imagine that situation where you're really dying, and then. But with his blessings, if you look at it right now, there is absolutely no fear. One time, I think, I don't remember if it was in July or January. He was talking about something, and then he intensely looked at me, and he said, "You will get it. You will get this in this life." He said, "You will get it. You will
attain the state.
I don't remember.
You will attain the state."
I mean, yes. We will attain that state. I mean, if we get a guru like Nanagaru and Bhagwan, why will we not attain it, right? There is no doubt about it at this point of time. Attain it. But when we are dying, are we ready to accept that? That was the question, right? And this is something that everybody has to look inside us, and that has to be one the ultimate goals, that when think about it ourselves, and when you're dying, can you really look at death and laugh about it? And that question has to be answered by each and everyone for themselves.
Yes.
So
this is so important, Madhavi, because it's not something. It's not just a simple single question, because ultimately, again, we have to root out the entire ego to be there.
Yes.
We have to root out the entire ego to be there, and to root out all the ego, first thing we have to get rid of is selfishness.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So unless we become from selfish to selfless, which is our vast journey. Though it's here and now, truth is here and now.
Yes.
But to get from selfish to selfless.
Yeah.
Is a task.
Yes.
So once you become selfless, once you become detached and selfless, then it becomes easier for you to leave the body, because you have become vast. You are not limited to your body and mind anymore.
Yeah.
You have grown from your body to family. You have grown from family to people around you in the office, or people, friends, your colleagues, or your family, then your friends. And the circle has gone to strangers, people, the people in need. The it's like, you know, from your home to your town to district, district to state, state to nation, and nation to international. You've got to quit. You've got to
let go.
Swardham minchi niswardham.
Yeah.
And instead of me and mine, we and ours.
Ours. And for that, this trick is very simple, Usha. The only, like we talked about, the work is being done through me. That's it.
That ends everything.
That ends everything.
The work is done through you, but not by you.
Right.
If this is understood, if work is done through you and not by you, it's over.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to come this way to the nose, or you want to directly hold your nose?
Hold your nose. And that itself takes a lot of burden off you, Usha. I mean,
if Bhagwan's subject is comprehended, it is the easiest to direct here and now. You just have to let go of that which is not you. That's all.
Right.
You are right there. And as Ambara said, you question once. You said, no, we have to answer this question alone. If you are asking yourself, who am I, from where have I originated? You are back to your source.
Yeah.
And that is the truth. From where your mind has arisen, that is the truth itself.
Truth. Yes.
But if you have the sacrifice and time and focus to do so, you are here and now.
Yes.
And the more we practice, you are devoid of everything spontaneously. And there's no much effort once you have mastered it.
Yeah.
Like, right. I think our Bhavani, Vaisar Bhavani is there.
Yes. Yes, Usha.
Yeah.
Bhavani,
yeah. I'm so proud of you devotees who get there so ruthlessly and so beautifully well.
I don't know. So one time, this was probably back in 2015 or something, he was asking me about something came about America. He said American soil is the one where I haven't stepped my foot yet. So I was like, Nanagar, you come, please, I will take you, right? And then Padmanti was like, no, you're not asking all those things. Nanagar won't come to America. It's literally impossible. So then he asked about cooking and all that. So I said, I don't know much of a cooking. I'm not a good cook. But we'll make sure we'll either take Padmanti with us, or we'll make sure that somebody very good expert cook will come with along with you to cook for you. So don't worry about it. And then he said, Bhagwan used to be a very good cook. Because we heard a lot of stories, right? Bhagwan used to always start his day in the kitchen in the morning before everybody and cook incredible dishes. Mm-hmm. Then he said, but there was one problem in Bhagwan's cooking. And I was like, what is the problem? So he's like, after he finished cooking, you can't tell what dish it is. So that, I didn't understand that first. I said, what does that mean? So then he said, there is no name and form for that food that he cooked. When you look at it, you cannot see, I mean, you cannot identify and say, okay, this is the name, this is what
this
came
is
from.
So
he said, when you cook, you have to be like that. But what he meant was, like, not physical cooking. That what he meant was, when do anything inside, you should not have name and form. That's how you should be cooked. And understanding was like a big step for me at that point. I mean, I was like, where did he take us from? I mean, from, do you know how to cook, to where, like, physical, we were talking about physical cooking, and then he says, you have to
think, Madhavi. Yes, as you said, every gross thing, he would take us to the subtle understanding.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
That is it. I mean, that at that point there was like silence, absolute. I mean, what else can you say there? I mean, that you have to cook with no name and form, and he didn't mean like physical cooking. So, I mean, those kind of things were like just for years, it would take you, on your inside journey.
You had a lot of sittings with Nana, though it was not for a very long span of time. But even those times where, when you were in his presence, it was a very profound time, and he chose your journeys in such a way that you were completely there in his presence, and he drove into you whatever was really required.
And most of the time it was he would, whenever January 2017, there is a speech, Usha, I don't know if you have heard or not, Vishakhapatnam. It is, everybody should listen to that. The question that I asked is, Moolatalam Moolam Loke Ela Chusukuntam? And it's only about an hour or hour and a half, but incredible, Usha. And then he talks about everything and all the steps, and slowly and detailedly, and he went into a lot of depths into it. And then I was just lost in that. I was just listening, and I was like trying to contemplate it and understand what he was trying to say, and all that was going on, and of course enjoying his bliss at that time. And then in the end he says, you know, Amma, if Bhagavan was there, he would say nothing ever happened. And we were all like, it was so intense, Usha, that 2 hours or three hours, I think it was, that the clipping was cut. But that 3 hours, it was like so much warmth, and there was so much energy in that room, and the way he was telling was at a very, very high state. You could feel that, everybody could feel that energy in that. And then in the end he says, if you ask Bhagavan, he said nothing ever happened, and he laughed about it, and he got up and he left. And here I was like trying to contemplate everything, and then it was so simple, nothing ever happened, right? So what is all this 3 hours? Nothing ever happened. And it was just joy, and there was nothing else.
it's like cutting off the main knot.
Neck.
He released us in his speeches itself. I mean, by making us understand the subject, like they say, you know, a good teacher, you don't need to study, you just have to listen to the class and you can write your exam. Yes. He was such an acharya to all of us. I mean, he was mentor, guide, every, you know, like a great parent, a mother, a great father, a great mother, and a great mentor, a great guide, and a great teacher, and acharya, the one who, you know, like acharya is a title given to someone who keeps the pupil in his house, monitors them all through, disciplines them. He watches over their eating habits, their mannerisms and all, and then guide them. each one personally according to that, which is discipline. In our case, the discipline was not strictly, I mean, honestly speaking, he didn't give us a strict discipline pattern to do it.
Yeah, that's why in the beginning I said, right, in the beginning I said, it will not get better than this ever. I mean,
Acharya, you have to wake up by 3 or 4, take your book,
right.
You have to do the reading, you have to do your prayer, you have to take your bath,
cold water in the morning.
So the modern Acharya with a great loving heart, unconditional love, and where he played the role of a mother, where the mother does not want the child to do anything, she does everything for you.
Yeah, and the way he supported us, Usha, that reminds me, Arunachalam 2014, I came to know that he was coming there for a week or 10 days, and not everybody was invited. So then I called him and I asked him if I could join him. He said, come. Nobody in my family knows, okay? So now it's not a problem because nobody will listen.
Now it's not a secret because it's already gone long years ago.
But
it was a very secret trip where you flew directly from there to Chennai, came to Tiruvannamalai and went back.
So
we had such adventurous trips with him, huh?
Yes. I mean, the limited time that was given for us to come to India, in that itself, he made sure that everything. One time.
He filled your cup. He filled your cup.
Yes. Overflowing always. So one time I had to stay at my in-laws for 4 weeks, and then I had to come to Vizag. So the first thing is, landed in Vizag. The next day morning, the trip was to Chinnur. So I go to see him. Every time I go to see him, the first thing I hear from outside is, Madhvi Ostanani Karaledu. Madhvi said she'll come, but she didn't come still. Where do you think she is? Can you call and see where she is? What time she'll come? These were kind of the things that I used to hear right from outside as I was stepping inside. So for me, the question was, you're all pervading. For us, those are the qualities for us. Why are you displaying them?
The beauty, he always spoke about detached attachment, right. No, Madhvi. But when it came for his love to us, he behaved as if he was possessive. He behaved as if he was so possessive that he wanted our complete attention.
So I couldn't see him for 4 weeks, and then Sunil was reminding me about this, and then he said Nanagaru said, when I went, when did you come? I said 4 weeks ago. Then he said, why didn't you come see me? I said, I was stuck in somewhere else, I couldn't come. So now, from now on, I'm free, I'll be able to come and see you.
Welcome to you.
And then he said, for respect, you can stay for a few days. You don't have to do these many days there.
The formalities.
you can
meet your formalities, and you don't need to stretch time for that.
Right. He was like, why? It literally sounded to me like, what it took you so long to come and see me when you were in India?
Yes. This was amazing, Madhvi, where he was longing for us.
Yes, I know, right? I mean,
he was longing for each one of us.
I mean, we
it's difficult.
We kind of
yes, I know. Yeah, it is beyond comprehension, but to an extent, you know. That was the sweetest way of taking away ego without pain in complete love. I mean,
love. Yes.
A storehouse of compassion. He would talk about Buddha, but he literally lived it, Madhvi. He literally showed it to us at every step of our life.
So, yeah, speaking about how he used to support us, Usha, that Arunachalam trip, you were also there when Raja Ravi Verma Garu and Surya Garu came. And Surya Garu asked, there's a video of that in YouTube also.
Yes,
Surya
yes.
Garu asked, so these devotees come, and I spoke to them last night, and I see that they all cling on to you like there is no tomorrow. They're always right next to you. They're always right next to you. They cannot go anywhere without you. Every day morning, all they think is how to come and sit next to you. It looks like they are not doing any sadhana because they're physically attached to your form. That's what he meant. That part of the recording was all kind of taken out, but what he said was, they're so much physically attached to you, and
more than sadhana, they are more clinging to you, your form, and they're roaming
form,
around you. And they think that is everything, rather than, you know, like an inner life and attaining the true state. They are constantly surrounding you, and, you know, their happiness is lies in being in your presence alone.
I know. There's no other goal for them, and they're just clinging on to your physical form. So so he said, Ramana's body left. Tomorrow your body will leave. So then what will happen to them? So they don't have a physical form. So everybody who was not a Nanagaru's devotee was kind of waiting for that to happen, Usha, actually. These devotees are gone case. Once Nanagaru's physical form is gone,
they will be lost.
They will be completely lost. And they will be no place to go. And the beauty of that is, I mean, everybody cried when they saw Nanagaru's body, but that was it. That was the maximum, right? And after that, I mean, yeah. So anyway, so
it,
then
he sat seated in our hearts.
Yes. Yes.
So there's no place to go.
There is no place to go.
So what Surya asked, his question was, where will they go once your body is gone?
He chose to
sit in our heart and make sure we don't move anywhere.
Yes. And then he gave the most beautiful smile, Usha, when Surya asked. And he didn't answer that right away. He was so sympathetic on Surya Garu. He's like, don't get deceived by my devotees. So he was like, such a sympathetic and beautiful smile that he gave. And he said, they're experiencing peace and they don't know about it.
Yes.
Right? And that's the best part, right? We are all experiencing peace and we don't know about it. That is more important that we don't know about it because, I mean, that causes a lot of ego again. And journey is
the
knowing all that peace.
Spiritual ego, I mean, the ego of spirituality or the ego that I have attained so and so does not exist because we never made any effort.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it can cause another so many rebirths, Usha, if you really have that. So not knowing it is such a great blessing, right?
Yeah,
and
way
he said that.
That's why he used to say, when a guru works on you, even the person sitting next to you will not know what he has bestowed you with.
Right.
As you said, they would only see your external life. They would only see your family or your way of working or the way you talk or behave. But they really do not know what has happened to you within.
So it's just amazing, Usha. I mean, it will not get better than this. And if we lose this time, it is not worth it.
The only time worth living is in his presence, either in his physical presence or internal presence. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have nothing else to see, yeah. Seek or listen to.
Yeah. I know.
I know you have a lot more to... Yeah, tell me. Tell me. Yeah.
2014, when I got out all the things that he gave me in 2014 in that Arunachala trip, but we'll talk about it maybe some other time later.
Yeah, what's the
it's
time now?
It's almost 9 o'clock, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I think you will have plenty to speak, Madhavi. I think we just had an interactive Nangaru's sharing, and it was not just Madhavi. I think we just had a conversation rather than your satsang.
No, this is fun.
I mean, you would have had so many more to talk about. We just like a phone call, we started speaking to each other. Huh?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so beautiful. Yeah, you can probably... say a few more things before you end it, Madhavi. I mean, a few more incidents or...
So, every Saturday morning we have our satsang here, Usha. Other than Friday's Aruna Aunty satsang, Saturday morning we have... Friday afternoon, 12 o'clock Eastern time is Aruna Aunty satsang. It's been going on for years. Bala Aunty started it. Bhimvaram, Parvati Garu.
Parvati Aunty.
Parvati Aunty.
Hi, Manji,
whenever they come, they
nice. Whenever any devotee, any old devotee had come there, you grab the opportunity to do satsang with them.
Luckily for us, now Aruna Aunty is continuing still.
Very good.
Friday for everyone, and Saturday just on the East Coast time zone we have a small satsang. Then there is another satsang in North Carolina. There's Texas Uma and her
group
there. They have satsang. I think they have it on Sunday or Saturday. So Nanagaru's work is being done through
every.
Yeah. So when you came, I mean, it was the best. It was like a big festival for us.
Yes, it was a festival for me too, Madhavi. I think it was mutual. It's always mutual among devotees, no? Like when we see each other, it's like we are meeting Nangaru, a representative of Nangaru.
Yeah.
Whichever devotee you come across, it's like you're seeing a representative of Nangaru.
Right.
So it's huge, such huge beauty.
In all of them.
Because ultimately we are all his children, we are all his reflection, and we will be him someday.
Yes, there is no doubt.
without any separation. We don't feel the separation even now, we haven't reached there yet, but still we feel that oneness with each other, no matter. We feel one with each other. And it's such an amazing work of Nana. And we will keep talking on this platform. Yes. We will need more of your sessions.
I don't know.
So we can discuss about it. Actually, we can make an interactive thing where, you know, we can discuss on Nangaru's subject. We can pick a topic and talk on it of what Nana, the tidbits, the reminders that he spoke on each occasion. When we don't have a speaker for English, we can do that, Madhavi.
Sure.
So, wonderful having you, Madhavi. Yeah, because we are part of this team anyway.
These satsangs have been very, very helpful, Usha. I mean, there's so many things that we learn from everybody else. I mean, it's just amazing. Every week, it's a different form of him, and that gets exposed. You're like, okay.
Yes. And as he said, look around and learn from everything. You learn a lot. I mean, you don't need to experience it yourself to learn it.
Yes.
It's such a beautiful journey. Yeah. So we are all in this together, and we shall be in this together forever also. Yeah. So thank you so much, Madhavi.
Parmagaru's website, Usha, that's I mean, how much it has helped us all devotees, especially here in the beginning. Now everybody is using it. That is very nice. Even that radio and all that incredible work.
Incredible work. Yeah, true. Yeah, even now on the groups, you know, like Vijay into YouTube, Shiva, Vijay, all these people, like, I mean, all of them, they have collected videos from all the devotees, the pictures from all the devotees. They have made huge, you know, like album of Rangaru's pictures, albums, and then comparing with Ramakrishna. I mean, Vijay has done extraordinary work yeah. over the years. And later Geeta, Aparna, of course, Grishma has started her website long back, and it was being blessed almost, I think, 12 or 14 years ago by Nangaru. And we didn't know that a turning or like this would happen.
Yes.
We had no clue. So we are just living His grace in the moment of however He's taking it, we are just enjoying it.
Enjoying it, yeah, that's true. When you look back, that's what you feel. In 2016, I think, Usha, he once said that this body will go away. It won't stay for too long. But there will be a point where there will be more number of people visiting Junnur than Arunachalam Ramanakshetram. And he clearly said that there will be more number of people visiting this Kshetra than then Dhammanashram. So,
it's happening.
That time when he said that to me, I thought, okay, maybe not in our lifetime, right? Because we wanted Nanakarans to stay until we leave our body. Like, okay, maybe some other lifetimes. But the amount of work that everybody is doing, this is just we just spoke about the online part, but the work that President Lakshmi Auntie, Sachinarayan Uncle, Haima Auntie, all the Sunil, everybody that are Surnarayan Rajgaru, everybody who's on the ground doing such amazing work. We will see that in our lifetime, maybe. So.
Yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, it's tremendous. I mean, as it was before, or I should say, much more. You know, like when we had visited for Guru Purnima, it was such beauty. And so much of that Nana's aura could be felt so clearly. I mean, like ever before, there was no difference.
Yeah.
I should say, with the much more clarity of thought, people, because we were, at least, you know, had that body and then we had this attachment, we had to be in His presence on that particular time. But now, it's like all pervasive now. And
that's what I always keep remembering. When you were here, you made a very profound statement, Usha, that when Nanagaru was there, we used to see Nanagaru only in Him. But when He left His body, now He's showing us. He's showing Himself in everybody. So that is just an amazing statement.
So He took us, He elevated us. He elevated us from being dependent to standing on our feet.
Yes. And that's what He meant when He said what they're experiencing is peace and they don't know about it.
Yes.
And that's what He meant by that.
Yes. Now He makes us realize how much He bestowed it on us, unasked. Very beautiful, Madhavi. Thank you so much, Ma.
Thank you.
Om Sri Nana Paramatmane Namaha.